Okay, now the this idea I just thought of this afternoon. I'm not even going to be in Matat Yahu for Shabbos, so I'm not giving this drasha. But in order to put it on the my website, I have to have some kind of drasha for the Shabbos, and it has to be done early. So I use you as the incentive to finish it today. But it's still in its early rough stages. And I have another shot at this in a Tanya on Tuesday night, in case you come up with questions. I'm always afraid of speaking this in front of Rabbi Carmen. I'm afraid to come up with a question that's going to devastate this thing completely, but we'll try anyway. Okay. I'd like to first discuss the connection between the Parsha, the Sedra, and the Haftorah. So the Sedra speaks about Korach's challenging Moshe Rabbeinu's authority and his appointment of Aaron HaKohen to be the Kohen Gadol and the whole machlokas that ensued. And there is a sentence in the Sedra where Moshe Rabbeinu says to the Ribbono Shel Olam that, Ribbono Shel Olam, I want you to champion my cause and prove that I have not done this on my own. Because lo chamor echad mehem nasasi velo hariosi es echad mehem. I never took a donkey from them. I never exploited these people at all. Neither did I do them any harm. That they should now come and challenge my authority here and have complaints against me. Similarly, in the Haftorah, we find a very similar statement made by Shmuel Hanavi to the people, and that he says to them. Eshor mi lakachti, whose ox did I take? The esmi oshakti, who did I deal with unjustly? Esmi ratzosi, miyad mi lakachti kofer v'alimei naibo, who did I take a ransom from to fill my pockets and not do justice? Similar, very similar sentence. So that is, in fact, the Levush says that is one of the major connections between the Sedra and the Haftorah, this similar puzzle. Now, I was thinking of a few other connections, and then we'll see the general idea of the connection between the Sedra and the Haftorah, not just certain episodes. Another connection is in the Haftorah, it speaks about Chidush HaMalucha, that they were going to renew the kingship of Shaul HaMelech, who was already coronated as king, but he wasn't accepted by everybody. There were people who objected and questioned his authority as king, or what the purpose was altogether, who needs him, what he's going to do, and they didn't accept him. And after he was successful against Nachash and the Ammonim, so they saw that they could get some benefit from Shaul HaMelech, and they decided to accept him. So Shmuel HaNavi brings them to Gilgal to renew the coronation of Shaul HaMelech. Similarly, in the Sedra, there is people who are questioning the authority of Moshe and Aaron, and their authority is reestablished after the people of Korach are killed in a miraculous way, and the Ribbono Shel Olam champions the cause and shows that they are the rightful leaders. So there's another connection between the Haftorah and the Sedra. Another connection. The Sedra speaks about, aside Moshe and Aaron, Korach. And Shmuel HaNavi was a direct descendant of Korach. Even more than that, the rabbis say, what incited Korach to feel that he had a right to challenge the authority of Moshe, and more specifically Aaron HaKohen? Because he saw prophetically that Shmuel HaNavi was going to come from him. And the Torah, the Navi, compares Shmuel to Moshe and Aaron. Moshe the Aaron, the Kohanov, and Shmuel the Korach Shmo. It puts Shmuel on the same par as Moshe and Aaron. So Korach reasoned, if I have such a great person coming for me, who is equal to both Moshe and Aaron, then I must be somebody special and I can challenge them. So the fact that the Haftorah speaks about Shmuel who was a descendant of Korach. Korach is another connection between the Haftorah and the Sedra. Another thing that's a connection. In the Haftorah, it mentions the following pasuk. Shmuel HaNavi says, Hashem asher osa es Moshe this Aaron. God who made Moshe and Aaron. That's obviously not referring to the fact that the Ribbono Shel Olam made them into people. Right? God makes everybody. Right? But what it means is he made them into leaders, which is a corroboration, an issue of Korach's descendant to the fact that Moshe and Aaron were appointed by God and didn't grab their authority on their own, which Korach suggested. So here is a descendant of Korach corroborating the fact that God was the one who appointed Moshe and Aaron. Another connection is that in the Sedra, God champions the cause of Moshe and Aaron, and he proves to the people through miracles that Moshe is in fact the God-appointed leader of the Jewish people and didn't do these things on his own, and whatever he did with God's command, who he appointed to be various leaders together with him, Aaron HaKohen, Elitzaphan ben Uziel, who was appointed to be the head of his family in the tribe, which Korach thought that he should have been appointed, and he therefore accused Moshe of doing this on his own, of nepotism, and not doing it because God said to do it. And Aaron was also vindicated when the matah of Aaron sprouted the flowers and almonds. In the Haftorah we have a similar thing. Shmuel HaNavi says, after he finishes saying, can anyone accuse me of doing anything wrong against the people, of hurting the people or whatever, or taking advantage of the people, right? And the pasuk ends, Vayomer Eid. And he said, I am a witness. So obviously, if he's speaking to the people, it should have said, Vayomru, Eidim, we are witnesses. They should have answered. So the Gemara says that this is one of the cases where Ruach HaKodesh, Hofia, the Beis Dino Shel Shmuel, where a heavenly voice resounded, Vayomer, the Ribbono Shel Olam himself said, Ani Eid, I'm a witness. You're right. He vindicated Shmuel. So we have God vindicating Moshe and Aaron in the Sedra, and God vindicating in a miraculous way Shmuel also in the Haftorah. And one last connection is that a miracle happened totally out of nature to vindicate Moshe and Aaron, where the ground opened up and swallowed up Korach, and the Ketores, a fire, came down from the heavens and burnt the people who made the Ketores. And in the end of the Haftorah is another miracle outside of nature that comes to corroborate what Shmuel is telling the people. It's the time of the harvest. It's already way into Nisan. And there's rainfall. Something that's totally not... What? Whatever. It's after Tkufas Nisan, after the time when the rain is beneficial, then the rain is detrimental. And Nizmana Katsir, there's rain. And that the people take as a sign that what Shmuel is telling them is God's word. Okay. Those are the connections. Now I want to tie them all together and to make it more of an idea than just a bunch of separated incidents that happen to have parallels between the Sedra and the Haftorah. The Kliyakar has a very interesting explanation of when the people asked for a king in the time of Shmuel, why Shmuel got angry with them as if they were doing something wrong, when the Torah itself says you'll come and you'll ask for a king and there's a mitzvah to appoint a king. What's the difference? And there are many explanations of this. The Kliyakar says a very interesting idea. He says the Torah describes the way the Jewish people will ask for a king when it's proper as som asima alai melech. I want a king put over me. When the people came to Shmuel HaNavi, they asked for it in a different way. They didn't say asima alai melech, osim alai melech. They said Tnu lanu melech. Give us a king. Says the Kli Yakar, the idea is the following. A king, the people have to accept his authority where he rules over them. Not where they feel that the king is in their hands and they can rule over him and use him and manipulate him for their purposes. A ruler is there to guide the people and to rule over them. They have to accept his authority, not where they feel that the king can be somebody who can do what we need, and we'll use the king, we'll manipulate the king. So when they asked for a king, they wanted someone to manipulate. Tnu lanu, give us a king, right? Put him in our control. And the proper way of asking for a king is, asim alai melech, I want to put a king over me. That's what the Kli Yakar says. So basically, the king is not there to serve the needs of the people insofar that the people will use the king to accomplish what they want to accomplish, and they will be the ones who guide the king, that they have to submit to the authority of the king, let him guide them. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter says that this idea is represented by the Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara says that one of the attributes, the characteristics of the generation before Mashiach comes, will be pnei hador ke pnei akelev. The face of the generation will be like dogs. So he says, Chazal said, and the Farshim say, that the face of the generation refers to the leaders. The leaders will be like dogs. So you can understand that literally, right? Especially if we are the generation before Mashiach comes. There'll be a lot of secular leaders that are mamish like dogs, okay? And that is a compliment to them. And dogs mean they'll have a lot of chutzpah. That's one idea of a dog, okay? But you can find many other ideas if you want. But the Rousseau Salanter says it means something else. It means the following. So if somebody came from Mars, never saw this planet, lands on Earth and sees a man walking his dog. So the dog is walking ahead on a leash, and the man is holding the leash. What is his first impression of what is he observing? This planet is inhabited by four-legged creatures that lead two-legged creatures around on a leash. So it looks like. When will he realize that he's making a mistake? When they come to a crossroads and they have to turn. So the dog looks back to see where the man wants to go. And then the dog goes according to the lead of the man. Then it's obvious that even though the dog is walking in front, it's the man from behind who's leading the dog and not the dog who's leading the man. So too, says Rousseau Salanter, before Mashiach comes, the leaders will be like dogs. They will look like they're leading, but their lead will be to look back at the people and see where they want to go. They'll do what's popular. That's why there's so many polls that are taken, to find out what's popular, not what's right to do. Leaders won't have any courage to lead people with authority. They'll do what people want. Right? They want to win popularity contests. And therefore, whoever makes more of a difference to them, who makes them popular or fills their pockets or whatever, or ensures their re-election, that's what they do. Not what's right. Not what the people really need, but what the people want. And that's like a dog leading a man when it's really the man leading the dog. So therefore, a leader, a king, is not in the hands of the people that the people can guide him, right, that he should do what they want. They have to accept his authority. On the other side, it's also not that the king rules over people for his sake, that he should be able to aggrandize himself and raise himself up and to be a big shot. Right? In fact, the Gemara says, what seems to contradict what we just said, the Gemara says in Horius that, I think it was Rav Gamliel, who wanted to appoint two of his students to positions of leadership, and they avoided him. They didn't want to become leaders. So he said to them, Kimidumim atem, you think I'm giving you authority? I'm giving you servitude. You become a servant of the people. Okay. Now, that seems to contradict what we said. Is the Melech an authority figure who does what's right despite what the people want, or he is a servant of the people, do what the people want? The answer is that we're talking about something different. There are three areas here. One is the purpose of a leader is for the leader's purpose. He is there to make himself a big shot, to benefit as much as he can from the people who make him a great person, who pay him, who give him favors, and to benefit from being somebody who is above everybody else. That's one. That's not proper. That's not what a leader is. He's not someone who makes himself great at the expense of the people. That's what Rabbi Gamliel was telling. I'm not giving you shrora. I'm not giving you the kind of authority for your sake that you should be a big shot. I'm making you subservient to the people, but not that you're subservient to the people to do whatever they want. Subservient to the people means that you serve the people in guiding them in what's right for their sake, but not for your sake. So it's in between. It's not doing whatever the people want. Doing what they want, that's not a leader. It's not manipulating the people for the leader's sake. That's not a leader. A leader is someone who serves the people and guides them to do what is right for them. So they accept his authority and follow him, not what they want to do, but what he feels is the proper thing. But he's doing it as a servant of them to serve their needs, but not what they want, but what they need, what's proper. That's the real leader. So it's not this extreme where it's for the sake of the leader, and it's not for this extreme where it's for to achieve whatever the people want. It's for the sake of the people, but the leader exerts authority to do what's good for the people, not necessarily what they want. That's the idea. And this is where Korach made a mistake. What?
The advisors of Kassavah.
What?
The advisors, the older advisors of Kassavah.
Right.
To be an enemy people, now
then
you're
to lead
them to greater.
Right. So
those are the older ones or the older.
Right. In other words, the ones who were telling him. Right, but that, no, that's exactly the point. Rehoboam wanted to manipulate the people. He wanted to use the people for his ends. In that respect, you're not, that's what it says. You're not there to manipulate the people and to hoard over them, right, for your sake. In that respect, you serve the needs of the people. You're an eved to those people, but not an eved that you listen to whatever they want. You're an eved that you serve their needs, not their desires. That's the idea. You be an eved to them, show them you're not manipulating them. You're there to serve their needs. You're doing what's good for them. But on the other hand, you're not an eved to them to do whatever they want, but whatever is good for them. That's the idea. But not what's good for you. So that's the middle madrake. Nice try.
You're choking the yeshivas of their funds and then you can operate proper leadership.
Who?
Choking the yeshivas of their funds that they need. Is that proper leadership?
No. We're talking about a real leader. The people who abuse leadership are the ones you're talking about. We're talking about what a real leader is supposed to be is described by what a melech is supposed to be. Okay. This is where Korach made his mistake. Korach said like this. Either the leader is supposed to guide the people, right, or he's there for his own covet. And it's important to have somebody who has covet, right, that maybe that's good for the Jewish people too, that there be people of great stature that gain and manipulate the people or whatever. So he said like this, if the whole purpose of a leader would be to direct and guide and lead the people, then in this situation, what do we need leaders for? Everybody's already holy. God dwells amongst us. If you're going to tell me you need a leader to make us more holy, to bring God amongst us, I understand, but we don't need that. So then why are you Moshe and Aaron leaders? Must be because you feel that there's another purpose of a leader. That is to manipulate the people and make themselves great. So Maduah Tisnasu Akal Hashem. And if you feel that it's okay to be a leader and pick yourself up above the people, and that's a benefit. Somehow there's a benefit of there being people who are above everybody else. then why you? It could be me too. Right? And that was Korach's mistake. That's what he thought leadership was all about. And that's what he wanted. He wanted to be kicked up above the people. And kol haposo b'mumo poso. If you could be Choshe, the Moshe Rabbeinu, the greatest honor, wants to be a big shot, right, then it must be that you want to be a big shot. So that was what Korach, the foundation of Korach was kina. He was jealous, right, gaiva, haughty, and he felt that there are an elite group of people that deserve to be higher than other people, and that is the purpose of a leader. And if Moshe and Aaron are serving that purpose now, I want to serve that purpose too. So that was his mistake. And that's why he said, Tala shekulo tchelis. If you have a talis, that's all tchelis. The tchelis is supposed to remind you of God. If the whole talis is tchelis, then obviously you know that God's there. What do you need at tzitzis to remind you that there's God? You have the talis. So if the whole Jewish people are kodesh and God is there, that's like a talis shekulo tchelis. So what do I need the tzitzis, the leader, to guide them? Obviously, if you need the tzitzis, it's not for the sake of the talis, it's for the sake of the tzitzis. But they should be, an elite group. The same thing, bias shemole svarim. If you have a house that's full of svarim, the whole house is holy. What do you need a mezuzah for? If the purpose of the mezuzah is to bring holiness in the house is full of holiness. The whole people are holy, and God is amongst them. What do you need the tchelis to bring God amongst them? What do you need the mezuzah to make them holier? The whole house is full of holy books. What's the answer? That's what Korach thought. And therefore, also another thing, when it came to Moshe Rabbeinu. When it came to Aaron HaKohen, he had another objection. You know why the Torah says that Aaron should get 24 Matnas Kahuna? For Aaron's sake. To make Aaron a big shot. To manipulate the people. Leaders are there to benefit from the people. So look at the Kohen Gadol. Look how he benefits. That's why he told the story of his poor widow, right, who had nothing, and she had a little farm, so whenever she grew her little bit of grain, Aaron HaKohen would come with his sons, take truma, meiser, challah, right? Every time she turned around with agriculture, she was giving to the Kohen. So she said, you know what? I'll sell the land, I'll buy a cow. Or whatever. Came Aaron HaKohen and took her Bechor, Meiser, right? The firstborn he took away, the tenth he took away from the offspring. So she said, you know what, I'll shech the cow, these eat the meat. And Aaron came and took the Matnas Kahuna from the animal. Finally she said, you know what, I'll make the whole thing hektish. Aaron came and said, hektish goes to me. It's chayre. And he ended up taking everything from this poor woman. So what was the idea? Well, this is true, but it wasn't for the sake of Aaron. It wasn't that the Torah gave this to make Aaron to give, fill his pockets. We'll see that Matnas Kahuna is for the sake of the people. That they can give to the Kohen, they benefit from it. Not the Kohen's benefit. We'll get to that in a second. But that's what Korach thought. So what is the answer? So if the whole purpose of the leader is to guide the people, if the people are totally holy, and God dwells amongst them, then what is the function of a leader? Why wasn't Korach's conclusion right? That if that's not the function, then the function must be for the sake of making the leader elite and letting him benefit from the people, if the people have not the benefit from him. The answer is that even if the whole people are holy and God is amongst them, you still need a leader, because people see things the way they want to see them. And even holy people and godly people can distort what they see by what they want to see. Shochad, ya'aver, any pikhim, v'yisalev, divrei tzadikim. You can be a tzadik who's totally holy, and a pikeach who has God right there with him, and you won't see God, and you won't see holiness. You'll see tumah in the place of holiness as being holy, and you'll see ungodliness as being in the place of godliness as being godly. You'll totally distort things. So you need a leader who will be able to see things in a more objective way, who's not subservient to the desires of the people, who he himself is a chacham, a gibor, an onog, an usher, a person who is beyond his own negias. He's not subservient to his desires and wills. He's beyond that. And he's able to see what's really right and good rather than what is desirable. And then he can guide the people to do what's really proper, to see God. That's why even a talis, a tulot chelis, the talis is the beggar. It's a cover to the person. Once you're dealing with cover, the chelis won't lead you to God. It'll lead you the other way. So you need something separated from the garment, on the end of the garment, one string that will then give you the understanding of how to see God, and then you'll see God in the beggar too. But if you only have it in the thing that covers you, with all of your bias, you'll never come to see God, even if the whole talis is chelis. Same thing, you have a house full story. But if you don't, before you enter that house, before it's your house, your place, your castle, if it's full of sparring, you'll never see what's in the sparring. They'll distort everything. But if before you enter that house, you have something that's separated from the house, that can give you a perspective on what's in that house, that's objective, then you can enter the house and make use of the sparring. The mezuzah and the sealed chelis on the tzitzis represent the leader. They're necessary even if the whole house is full of sparring, and even if the whole beggar is chelis. Because if you see things the way you want to see them, none of that will help. It'll only help if you have someone separated from all of that who can guide you, not according to what you want to see, but what's really there to see. That's what a leader really is. And that's why it says that melech comes from the lashon of limolek, to advise. Ein melachim ele etzos. Melech means an advisor. What's advice? Advice is where somebody tells you an objective view of what you are dealing with from a very subjective way. What do you need advice for? To see things more objectively, to see all of the ramifications and not to see it the way you want to see it and to come to a decision according to what you'd like, but rather to what's really proper. Therefore, when one of the prime qualities of a melech is that he has to be an omer. And he has to be someone who is sameach b'chal. He's not looking to manipulate the people. He's interested in being totally objective, not dependent on the people, but totally independent. So he can guide the people in a very objective way without being dependent on them and then having the same subjectivity they have, because he's dependent on them. And that's why the first king, Shaul HaMelech, was described as being Mishichmo Ulamala Gavoa Min Ha'am, Mikol Ha'am. He was higher than the people from his shoulder up. That seems to describe a giraffe. Right? In other words, he was basically, right, the same height as everybody else to the shoulder, but from his shoulders up, he was higher than everybody else. That's not how tall people are. They are proportionately taller from their toes to their head. But it seems to describe Shaul HaMelech as being only taller from the neck up, right? Which again is a giraffe. What does it mean? It means, I think, is the following. For Shaul to be the proper leader, he could have stood on the heads of the people and been higher from them by using them to build himself up. That's one wrong idea of a leader, where the leader manipulates and uses the people. Then Shaul would have been... Then there's another thing where the leader is stepped on by the people. Right? He's used by them. They use him to get what they want. That's also not right. The leader has to not step on the heads of the people and use them and manipulate them. He has to stay on the ground, not on the heads of the people. But he has to be above the people and free himself from their bias and be able to see above their heads what's really proper, not how they see it. That's how a leader has to be greater. He has to be above them from the shoulders up, not above them by standing on their heads. Not manipulating them and not being manipulated by them. He has to stand on his own 2 feet, but his head has to be higher. That's the description of a leader. And therefore, in order to be free from bias, they couldn't depend on the people and get benefit from the people. And therefore, Shmuel and Moshe Rabbeinu were machmir. not to take anything, but even when they were serving the people. If they needed to serve them, they needed to do things for them, so usually leaders have an expense account that comes from the seaboard, right, in order to... Usually the leader has an expense account that comes from the tzibur to pay for things that he's doing. He's serving the tzibur. Why should he pay the bill? Right? If he has to go and do something for the sake of the community, why can't he take a donkey from them, right, and use it for their purposes? I'm serving you. So why should I use my own donkey? Right? You pay the gas. Right? It's acceptable. Definitely perfectly okay. But Moshe and Shmuel felt that if we take anything from the people, they are going to feel that we are using them. And we're manipulating them. And we don't want that. We want them to understand we're serving them. But not serving whatever they want. We're serving them and being able to guide them into doing what's proper. That's the idea. Hold on, I want to say one. Let me finish. What? What? Yeah, wait till I finish. That's the last statement I made. Before that, I said that Moshe and Shmuel didn't want to take anything from the people, what they had a right to take, to pay their expenses, because they didn't want to give the people the feeling that they were using them, that they were benefiting from them in any way. That people should know, we are totally serving you, but we're serving you to direct you the proper way, not serving you to serve your desires. That's a different kind of service. That's not a leader. That's the case. I was thinking that to explain the punishment of Korach in a simple, general way, and then I think a much deeper specific way. In general, basically what we're saying is that when a person, what do you need a leader for? To give you an unbiased view of where you really should be going, and not your biased view of where you'd like to go and thinking that's what's good for me. So the same thing that could be good in one situation is bad in a different situation. And if you don't know how to look at it properly, you can turn bad to good and good to bad. Because everything can be looked at from different vantage points and be made to look good or made to look bad. And what you really need is to know how to put it into perspective and know if it's really good or bad in the context that it's in. If that's the case, the punishment of Korach being swallowed up, right? Now, being buried when you're dead is a very good thing. It's a very positive thing, right? If you ask somebody, is burial positive or negative? Very positive, right? People are most nefesh to get other people buried properly, right? It's a very positive thing to be buried, right? Kever Yisrael. The burial is a kapara, a proper burial, and it's the process that brings to Tchias HaNeshem. It's like a seed decomposing and then growing again. So the whole idea of burial is a very positive thing if you're dead, okay? And standing on the ground, if you're not dead, is a very positive thing. But if you change them around, for a dead body to be on the top of the ground, or a live person to be buried in the ground, is not good at all. So the same thing that in one context is very good, in a different context is very bad. You need the leader to be able to tell you if you're alive or dead, whether the burial is good or not. So Korach's punishment was that if you want to be a leader who's not guiding people to see what things are unbiased, but you want to have your bias and manipulate the people and take advantage of them and make yourself great at their expense, then you're leading the people to not be able to see things in their proper perspective, and therefore you're going to be buried alive, right? Where burial, even if it's good in one context, in this context, is not great. The same thing goes with what's it called with rain. Rain is a very positive thing at the right time. At the wrong time, rain can be disastrous. If you don't know how to look at things properly, you can take what under one circumstance is very positive and turn it into something negative. That's in general. I think it's something much more, much deeper. That is the following. Shmuel needed to educate the people of how followers should view a leader. Not that the followers should look at the leader as someone as they can manipulate and use for their purposes, but someone that they acquiesce and accept his authority for their purposes, but for their purposes of what's right and wrong, what's not desirable, okay, necessary. That is symbolic of the rain. The rain comes from above. You pull it down, right, to serve your needs. Now, if you recognize the fact that you are incomplete and you need that rain to complete you, you need that rain to guide you, to make you grow, then the rain is, that leader is very, very positive. I'm not taking the leader, he should do what I already decided has to be done, he'll do it for me. That's, I'm already complete, right? I make the decisions. I don't need the leader to complete me and perfect me, right? I just need him to do my dirty work. Then it's like taking the rain when you're already a grown, finished crop, and then the rain is very, very destructive, if that's what you think a leader is. When is rain positive? When you bring it down and you're not yet perfected. You're still growing. And you understand you need that rain to help complete you. Then the rain is positive. So Shmuel, through the miracle he did, showed the people, if you want to bring down the influence of the one who's above and bring him down to serve you, he can serve you if you let him develop you and perfect you. But he can't serve you if you feel developed and perfected and you just need him, right, extra. Then the rain is destructive. So that was the lesson that Shmuel taught them with his miracle. Now let's go to the other miracle. Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to teach the leaders, not the people, but the leaders, how they should be leaders. In other words, Moshe was dealing with people who were want to be leaders, who misunderstood what leadership is, who thought that leadership was building themselves up at the expense of the people, using the people for their greatness. So he says like this, what was the miracle? People stand on the earth, okay? What's the purpose of standing on the earth? To serve my needs, that's why I stand on the earth? Or God created me and gave me a place to stand on the earth in order to perfect myself and perfect the world around with me too. Man stands on the earth in order to perfect the world, to cultivate the land, to bring out the best on what the earth is. So man is given the ability to stand on the earth, not just to make himself higher than the earth, but for the sake of perfecting and cultivating the earth itself. Similarly, a leader stands on top of the people. Hitaka is above them. But he doesn't stand on them for his sake. He stands on them so he'll be able to cultivate and perfect them and bring out the best that they have to give. On the other hand, where a person feels that he's doing it for his sake, he's going to benefit, right? Then he doesn't stand on the earth anymore. Then the earth's over him. Where he needs it, where he's not perfecting the world, but he's finished and he needs to be perfected in a way that he can no longer do it for himself, then the earth perfects him, but he's no longer standing on the earth. Then he's under the earth. And the earth, who's above him, perfects him by giving him a kapara, by what's it called, decomposing his body, making it like a seed that eventually will grow again. Then he's the beneficiary, but he's no longer standing on the earth, the earth's standing on him. Okay? On the other hand, if you want to turn around those things and you want to stand on the earth in order that it should benefit you, that can't be. So then you're swallowed up by the earth a lot. That was the lesson of Moshe Rabbeinu's miracle. Therefore, after the machlokas of Korach, the Torah goes over all the matnas kohuna and lets me know, you know why we give the Kohen these things? Not to build the Kohen up. That was the mistake that Korach made. It wasn't for the sake of the Kohen. Because the Kohen has to serve the people. If he's not going to be taken care of, he can't serve the needs of the people. So we're giving the Kohen, not for the Kohen, for the Kohen's sake, but for the Jewish people's sake. It's your benefit. He doesn't have a nachla. He has nothing except he's a servant of the people. But in order for him to serve you properly, he has to eat. So you're going to have to support him. Not for his sake, for your sake. The Kohen eats from the carbon. Not for his sake. Kohen ochel and bailim mishaprim. It's your sake. His eating benefits you. Your supporting him benefits you. So the leader is not being supported for his sake. He's being supported so he can be a true servant of the people and not have to take care of himself, but to take care of the people, and the people take care of him. But not for his sake, for their sake. So that was why the whole idea of Matnas Kahuna was repeated after the Machlokas of Korach. Okay. Any questions? That's more or less next week's segment. Yes. What? Because when the Kohen eats that sacrifice, he eats it l'shem shamayim with kedusha, and just like burning something on a mizbeach is giving it to God, the Kohen is so dedicated to the Ribono Shel Olam that his eating is like the mizbeach eating it. So it's like you're burning it on a mizbeach, you're bringing it closer to God by giving it to the Kohen. That's the idea. Okay, in any case, we're not going to have time. I thought it was about 8:30. We definitely have time to go back to last week. So I'm just going to tell you something that I think is good for every kehila to hear. Since there aren't too many kehilas to speak to, this is like one of the few that exist, the chlal here in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so I'll tell you something that I'm sure Rabbi Stein will be happy I'm telling you. Because if he'll come to Matthew Joe and tell my balabat, then I'd be happy too. So I can't say it there, he can't say it here, but I can say it here. It's very important for people to be part of a tzibur and to join in supporting the tzibur and in being part of what goes on of a tzibur. Not to be portioned in a tzibur. Not to be people who separate themselves from the community and act as free agents on their own and don't chip in, not monetarily, not physically, not spiritually, with what the kehila does. Hillel in Pirkei Avos said, "Al tifrosh min atzibur," and then he said four other things that seemed to have no connection. The al tamin ba'atzmecha ad yom moscha, don't separate from the community and don't believe in yourself till you die. The al tadinis havercha chetagilim komo, don't judge other people till you come into their place. The al tomar al dover she'iyek shar lishmoa shesofo lishama, don't say on things that are impossible to be heard, that eventually they'll be heard. In one second we'll discuss what that means. And al tomar l'she'ef ne'esh ne'shem alosipon, don't say when I have time, I'll learn, because maybe you won't have time. Seemingly five unrelated things. So I just wanted to say that Hillel really said only one thing. He said, don't separate yourself from the community. And then he gave four answers to excuses that people give why it's okay to separate from the community. First excuse, I don't need the community. Weak people need communities. They need a peer pressure. They need a support system. I am strong enough on my own. I don't need a kehila. Okay? Comes along Hillel and says, that's false. Al tamin ba'atzmecha ad yom moscha. Don't ever trust in yourself until you, everybody needs support. Everybody needs a kehila. Everybody needs more than just themselves. Don't rely on yourself. Second reason people don't like kehilas is because all those people in the kehila, they're not good people. This one's no good, and this one's no good, and it'll just drag me down. So instead of standing afar and saying, I didn't want to be part of a kehila because nobody in that kehila is good, they're all terrible people, I'll tell them as chaver chachitagil and koma. Okay. You have a right to make that decision after you have a connection with these people. First, join the kehila. See them close up, limkoma. Maybe you'll see that from afar they look a lot worse than they do from close up. Maybe not. But don't make the decision to separate from them from afar. Only after you higiel and koma. Only after you try. First. Second. Third. Many people don't want to have anything to do with the kehila because they say, well, I always give advice to the people in the kehila and they never listen. Right? And I know I'm always right. So inevitably, these are stupid people. They never listen to my good advice. They always do something else. So why should I bother with them? Al tomer, al dover, shiyef shalishmoa. Don't say on something that's impossible to hear, don't worry, someday they'll understand that I was right. No, maybe someday nobody will understand you were right because you're wrong. Right? Maybe it's something that's impossible to hear. Maybe the reason they don't listen to you is because what you're saying is not right. Not because it's definitely right, but these people are idiots. Maybe you're the idiot. Maybe what you're saying is not right. So don't say on something that's impossible to be heard, don't worry, someday it's going to be heard. Right? And therefore, why should I bother with people who never listen to me? And the last thing is, people say, I don't have time for a kehila. If I start getting involved in communal work, I'm not going to have time to learn. I'm not going to have time to spend with my family. I'm not going to have time to do my mitzvahs. Which is true, a person has to have time for himself. But he also has to have time that he has to give to the tzibur. The Moshe Feinstein said, just like you have to give meiser from your money, you have to give meiser from your time too. So therefore, a person shouldn't say, you know what, when I have all this extra time, because I won't waste my time with the community, I'll be able to learn. You know what? Shem Eloki Panim. You think God is going to give you extra time to learn at the expense of your responsibility to the community? So you'll find other things to take up your time. So if you don't contribute it to the community, you'll find out that you're not going to benefit from it anyway. God will have other things to waste your time. So those are four answers to reasons that people give why they don't want anything to do with the community. I was thinking that Chazal Darsh in the name of Korach. Korach was somebody else, was Porish Menat Zibur. He didn't want to be part of the cloud, part of a team effort. He wanted to be a free agent, you know, a superstar in his own. It's not enough there's one Kohen Gadol. I do my part, he does his part, we all work together. No, I have to be a Kohen Gadol too. So Korach represented somebody who wasn't part of the team. And the Chazal Darshan, the name of Korach, to show some of the qualities that led to being not a team person, not a team worker. First one is Korach. Korach comes from the Lashon of Kereach, bald, meaning a person who feels that he has nothing to contribute to the tzibur. He feels bald, feels empty. A person has no self-esteem, no self-worth. So he has nothing to contribute to the tzibur. What do I want to be part of the tzibur? I have nothing to contribute. A person has to appreciate what he is and what he can contribute. Everybody has something to contribute to the tzibur. So one thing that prevents people from being part of the tzibur is they feel kereach. They feel that they're useless. They have nothing to contribute. The opposite is Yitzhak. Yitzhak means shemen. It rises above everything else. I don't want to be part of the community because I'm above all of them. Right? Why would I want to stoop down and have to do with these lowly people when I'm so much above them? That's another thing that people think, and they don't want to be part of the team. I don't need the team. I'm above them. That's Yitzhak. Then there's Kahas. The word kahas comes from the word kihui. Kihui means to be acidic, not chasidic, acidic. Acidic means negative, right? Very much bikorti, very critical, right? These people are no good, this one's no good, that one's no good, the tzibur's no good, nobody's good enough, and therefore I don't want to be part of the team because they're all a bunch of idiots and all terrible people, and why would I want to have anything to do with these terrible people? So you're overly critical. That's kahas. Lazy means you're an escort. You want to get a free ride on somebody else's work. You're lazy, right? I'm not interested in helping build a kehila. Let somebody else do it, and I'll come in when I get the benefits. You want to be a lazy. You want to be mislata. You want to be an escort. You want to benefit and get a free ride on what the kehila does, but you don't want to pay for it, and you don't want to work for it. So those are four negatives that lead a person to be a Porish Menat Zibur. You feel you have nothing to contribute, you feel that the people are beneath you and you wouldn't want to have anything to do with them, you feel that everything is too critical, you're too critical of everybody and therefore you want to do anything with any other people because they're all no good, and you feel that you're too lazy to do anything. And you would rather benefit from what other people do than chip in and do something on your own.